Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Joe Zimmel and Valerie Friedman.
From Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford, welcome to a brand new season of Season. I'm Chef Plum. We missed you while we were away planning episodes and traveling all around the state talking to farmers and food makers. We have some things we want to share with you about changes for the new season and how the show is evolving. Seasoned is now first and foremost a monthly podcast. This is going to help us bring you more of the food content you love. And mark your calendars, the third Thursday of every month, a new season podcast will be available on our website, ctpublic.org/seasoned, and everywhere you get your podcasts. And there's one big change to season that I'm really excited about sharing with you. Every month, I'll be joined by a different co-host. That's right, like a funky cheese, I'll be paired with a fine wine. So together, we can take you to farms and restaurants across the state we think you might want to know about. And to kick off the second season of Seasoned, I've teamed up with someone near and dear to so many hearts in our local food world, Winter Kaplinson. There isn't a food maker in this state who doesn't know about Winter's work on the Connecticut Food and Farm Report and Connecticut Food and Farm Magazine. But if you don't know Winter, this moment from our day at Four Mile River Farm in Old Lyme is a pretty good introduction. Winter, what a beautiful New England farm. Like, I love the New England farm. That's all I keep thinking when I look around and see just the red barns and, you know, all the green trees, and there's chicken noises in the background. This is like your happy place, right?
Yeah. So by day, I'm a food and farm photographer. So I'm in restaurants. I'm at farms all the time. I'm looking today. We have a gorgeous overcast light. So all the colors are popping.
Makes you happy as a photographer, that's for sure.
This is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Talk about this place and what it means to you, because coming here was your idea.
Yeah, so as a photographer, I'm on assignment. I'm out in the field most days. I might be working on a piece for a restaurant. I might be working, in this case, I was doing photographs of the farm and their product for a website they were developing. So people like you and me get the luxury of being out and about, discovering things, right, seeing things. You know, when you're at these farms or you're in restaurants, the chefs and the farmers don't get out everywhere like we do. We have that amazing opportunity to discover things, to get a chance to talk about them.
Right.
I knew you guys would love this place.
Oh, this is beautiful.
The real deal in every way.
And I love, as a chef, I love that. And I think what's cool about this is that I don't know how many people realize that we have things like cattle farms in our state. And
right,
if you just do a little research or just find cool shows like Seasoned, cheap plug there,
right,
you can find out about these places and go to them. I mean, here, there's a great little stand. It's a whole honor system thing. You come in, there's refrigerators and freezers to buy things out of. But it's beautiful. This is literally right down the road from people's houses.
I'm basically a cheerleader for local food.
Part of the joy of teaming up with a guest co-host every month is not only do our listeners get to learn about a local farm or a chef they didn't know about before, but I also get introduced to people doing some pretty cool work in our state. So Winter, what have we got in store for our listeners today?
Coming up, you'll hear our conversation with Chef Ben Dubow of Ford City Works in Hartford. Remember Firebox?
Oh, yeah.
Ben is spearheading the effort to reimagine Firebox as Fire by Forge. It's still a restaurant on a mission. And later in the hour, we learn about a local company that curates gift boxes filled with Connecticut-made treats. We have a tasting party with the owner of Nutmeg and Honey.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also going to take you to Connecticut's Garlic and Harvest Festival in Bethlehem. And if you haven't tried garlic ice cream, and let me just say it again, garlic ice cream, it's a thing. This is the place to do it. But before we get to all of that, we're going to start with the family behind the farm we mentioned earlier, Four Mile River Farm in Old Lyme. Their specialty is local pasture-fed beef, pork, and chicken.
Butchers who want to learn actually seek the farm out to master this craft. Nuns Corsino owns the farm with his wife Irene and their son Chris Bourne. Tina Sirico is the chef on the farm. I wanted you to meet them because butchery is a bit of a lost art. And to really appreciate where your food comes from, for those of us who eat meat anyway, family farms like this one set the standard.
Yeah, and when we first meet Nuns, he shows us his chickens right off the bat. He's proud of them, very proud of them. But Four Mile River Farm is small, so the cows graze on lush grasses a few miles down the road at Ashlawn Farm. The whole operation depends on a network of farmers.
Hi, I'm Nuns Corsino, and I'm one of the co-owners of Four Mile River Farm. I'm Chris Bourne. I'm his son. I'm another co-owner.
And the real boss is in the house, my wife. She runs the show, so.
I got one of those, too.
I just wanted to take you over and just show you some of the meat bird chicks. We have 7 greenhouses, and we try to have about 125 birds in each greenhouse. They're there for another 5 weeks, and then they go to a USDA facility called Buffoni's Poultry Farm over in Johnston, Rhode Island, where they are harvested. But see, with these, we sell out whole bird, half bird, and then we part everything out, boneless breasts, drumsticks and thighs. We make chicken sausage, and it's... I can't believe all the chicken that we consume in this country.
Yeah.
From the chicken coop, we head to the processing room where the butchers custom cut the meat for online orders and cuts that go into the tiny, rustic on-site farm stand where customers shop the freezers and can pay using the honor system.
All right, so Winter, this room we just walked in right now reminds me totally of a butcher shop when I was in culinary school. But I look at the size of this massive Hobart grinder here, and you see sausages being made on the stainless steel counters on the side over there, a small burner set up, lots of scales. One of my favorites is the big meat hanging weigh.
I was just going to say the hook where the carcasses get hung there. Right. Yep.
Nunes, talk about what goes on in this room, and I'm guessing this is where we butcher everything.
Yes, this was initially our original barn. Back in the day, my parents had a food stand at the beach in Olime at Soundview Beach. So I had a little bit of how to set the place up. My brother-in-law, Mike, who's a culinary school graduate at the CIA, I always tease him about that. He also offered a lot of insight to how we should set this up.
You talked about how the product was coming back here from Rhode Island.
Right.
Why do you guys do that?
The main thing is I want everything harvested under USDA inspection. We're direct marketers, so we can sell to what they call an exemption that they have to hotels, restaurants, and institutions. So that's like when we provide the hamburgers for UConn for their end of school picnic, that's no problem for us to do that. We age the beef over in Rhode Island.
I love aged meat, Winter. Like, it's one of the things that makes me so happy.
Concentrates the flavor.
Just makes it so delicious.
Well, and it's how they're fed and all of that. We don't use any waste feeds. We don't give them donuts or bread or any of that stuff. They get a good, straight, hard feed.
Right.
The cattle are on pasture all the time, except obviously in the winter months. But we do feed a real good, high-quality grain along with that. And our customers give us their vote of confidence by buying stuff, you know. And if it wasn't any good,
they wouldn't buy it.
And like with the sausage that we make as an example.
Which is happening actually right now as we're in here.
This is right.
You guys are processing sausage today.
Yep. The sausage, we only use our own stuff. I don't have sows or boars or any of that. And typically that's what they make sausage out of and whatever. And even the same thing with the beef animals. These are number one choice steers.
Very important that here it's steers, not cows. There is a difference.
No, they're a big, big difference. With these steers, people go crazy over our ground beef. Well, most ground beef that you buy in the grocery store comes from the cull dairy cow herds or the older cows. They can't get bred or this, that, or the other. That's why they can sell it cheaper. Some of these big companies will go and say, oh yeah, it's Angus beef. They're not taking number one Angus steers and putting it in the hot dogs. They're taking maybe some old Angus cows or bulls or whatever. It's a whole science, meat science, all of that. It's not just people say a hot dog, it's all the junk. No, it's not. If you go and you get a good hot dog someplace, they're using good ingredients. It's like anything else, you know, and you have to take care of it. You have to feed them right.
Your customers can also see those cattle grazing at Ashlawn Farm, which is probably one of the most beautiful, iconic New England settings. White farmhouse, fields rimmed with stone walls and wooden gates, and your beautiful cattle out there and lush grass. And that really speaks to the life that they live and how they're raised.
Yeah. And I have people that literally say they drive by the product every day. I have guys that don't live in Lyme but work in Lyme and they drive by and see where their food's coming from.
And what does a farming day look like? When I did photos with you, we started at 4:45 maybe.
Depending on the day. On the day we're processing, they're going to be ready 4 o'clock here to get going. Days after that, Josue is going to meet us up at 6:20, 6:30. We're going to start moving birds at that point because they're the first animal up. The chickens are ready to go when the light's up. Get them moved, get them fed for the day, and then start checking some fences. We have a lot of deer. That good grass brings in the deer just as much as the cattle. So we'll check quarter of a mile, half a mile of fence a day just to make sure it's still up, and get everybody watered, and then come back here and see what has to go out the door, what broke, what has to be fixed, and move on from there.
Tell me about lunchtime, because we're all familiar with the lunch break, but lunch is different here, right?
Yeah, somebody cooks for lunch. On Monday, when we have a good staff in here, Tina usually surprises us with something.
Because Tina's also a chef.
Yes, so that helps. Or my mother will throw something together. She won't be able to tell you what's in it. It'll be good, though. And maybe we'll cut something off early in the morning and throw it on. That'll usually be dinner for my family. On Monday night will be a flap steak or just some piece that we took off that maybe is not as marketable, but delicious and easy to cook.
To me, the lunch, sharing lunch together with proteins right from the farm, speaks to the camaraderie.
It's a family meal. I love the family feel, the family vibe. It sounds like you have the crew. You treat it as one big family. I love that. And I can see that they need to get to work. So why don't we get out of the way and move and continue this conversation?
We ended up in the spot the farmers call the egg room. It's pretty obvious what goes on there. When the team isn't sorting eggs, though, it's a good place to talk. Chris runs the farm now, but we wanted to find out from him what it was like growing up on the farm.
It's fun. It's fun. I'm still doing a lot of those kid things now. We have every big boy toy you can imagine.
Lots of tractors.
We started with different animals. There's always something to do. So I'm trying to give my kids that same experience.
Yeah. How do your kids feel about it? Are they enjoying it?
They love it.
They think it's fun?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My daughter's ready to boss me around. She keeps asking me when she can drive.
7 years old.
The pedals yet.
How have things changed over time? Back in the day, when I was part of a group that ran a farmer's market, you were one of our first vendors. And we used to also shop at Ashlawn when the Lyme market was at Ashlawn. You know, what does the future look like?
You know, I think the customer has changed. Yes, people, I think, have more knowledge around their food, but they're not preparing as much as we've seen over the last few years. At least in this region of the country, the person that is going to buy a quarter, half, bulk beef, as you would call it, it's getting rarer and rarer. And now with so many options to either get prepared food or really hold your hand directions, you have to give different choices. And at the same time, we always have this comparison with the grocery store, which we have to get away from because there is no comparison. So we're kind of on a different edge of how to provide a service and a value to the consumer that's looking for good quality.
What are the economical cuts that taste delicious? The hamburger tastes delicious.
I mean, you take a top round steak, it's great. Mm. You can eat that whole thing. There's not a bone left. There's not a chunk of fat that your kids won't eat. You could take that, marinate it, eat the whole thing.
Chuck steaks. We're doing boneless chuck eye roast for people to crock pot. And then we'll cut a number of boneless chuck eye steaks.
We want to feed you Monday through Friday.
Right.
I mean, I think a strip steak, a ribeye steak, as great as they are, that's a treat, basically. Yeah. Let's get you fed. Let's get your family fed. And when we can sneak in those bonuses, great.
Well, all this talk about food winter, I think it makes a lot of sense to bring the chef in here to talk a little bit about some of these cuts and the fun things going on. So it makes a lot of sense to bring her up here with us into our egg room, which I think every house should have an egg room.
They should.
I'd like to have an egg room.
So we talked about the staff of butchers that you have here are kind of like a who's who of butchers, but there's also young butchers. They're learning the craft. What draws them here?
This is a dying art, and there's so many things, so many skills that we're losing out on. This is something that that we need. You know, small places, family places.
It's kind of got that heart still in it, you know. You're working with your hands.
Right.
Providing something that's been done for hundreds and hundreds of years and learning that skill that hasn't changed a whole lot.
Absolutely. To me, there's no better way to have guaranteed quality than to put your own hands on it. And I think that the same thing goes for butchers, right? There's no better way to guarantee that you're getting the right cut for what you need. There's no better person to go to and say, hey, I want to make this. what do I use, than a butcher. And I think that that's something that this young crowd of butchers hopefully continues. I love it here because it's like the best of all the worlds for me. I love the farming aspect of it. I love the family aspect of it. I am able to fulfill my love of food in a different way. When someone has a question here, what do I do with this? How do I make that? They come to me and I could spend all day talking to you about a single cut of meat. That's really, for me, it's about family. It's about quality. There's no better quality control than putting your own hands on something.
I love that, Winter. I love
the best. I told you.
That's great. I love that mentality. That's by the way, is a mentality of a great chef.
All right. So we're headed into the holidays. What are your tips for cooking special occasion beef, brisket, beef tenderloin, holiday roasts, any other cuts we should know about for the holidays?
So like one of my favorite ways to cook, my family does prime rib for Christmas. And my grandma always cooked prime rib in the oven. And it's good. It's my grandma's prime rib. But I really love to throw the prime rib on the grill. I know it's the winter, but it's got a lot of flavor. Every year we do a different type of rub and just have fun with the flavor. If we cook it at home, we smoke a brisket. And then, I mean, tenderloin's easy peasy. Like, yeah. Sear it off, toss it in the oven for a little while, and slice it up. You can't go wrong with it.
Keep it simple, salt it all the way around. Let it come to room temperature, I think, is really, really key when you're going to roast.
Yeah.
Let it come to room temperature before you cook it. Salt it a little bit before you cook it. And I'm a big fan of don't pepper it till the end because pepper burns.
And families look different. So Tina and I are dog people. Our dogs are our family. And there are some things that you have here that are for dogs.
Oh, yeah. We make a beef pet food topper. We call it Scooter's Pet Delight, named after Nunzi's beloved Sheltie Scooter. We always say that our dogs are fueled by Four Mile River Farm.
Well, I think the biggest takeaway here, Winter, that we can tell my wife is that fat is where it's at.
It sure is.
I told her. She doesn't believe me.
Fat is flavor.
I told her that too. She doesn't believe me.
We have a couple mottos. Fat is flavor and teamwork makes the dream work.
That's it.
Like, to me, that's the essence of this place is that we're a family, we're a team. We all kind of help each other.
I love that. And the family is very, very impressive. Thank you guys for having us. It's nice to meet you. Yeah. Tina, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
I'm going to go see if I can get some dog food now. That sounds great.
That was Nuns Corsino, Chris Bourne, and Tina Sirico of 4 Mile River Farm in Old Lyme. Visuals journalist Mark Murko was with us at the farm, so you can see photos of Nuns, Chris, and Tina, as well as the cows living their best life at Ashlawn Farm on our website, ctpublic.org/seasoned. I'll share some of my photos of the farm and its butchers on the site as well.
I should have got a selfie with a cow when I was there. Have you been to Connecticut's Garlic and Harvest Festival in Bethlehem? Thousands of garlic fans hit the Bethlehem Fairgrounds every October to meet the farmers and spin around on some rides and, of course, eat the garlicky food that'll ward off vampires for days. And that is no joke because I had garlic breath for 3 days. My wife made me sleep on the couch. I was there on a gorgeous fall day and got to talk with the co-founder of the fest, Dave Harkness. He's been putting on this event for 17 years.
We had kind of a rough start. Our first year, we had remnants of a tropical storm come through here. And we got 6 inches of rain the first day, and we couldn't even open. But the second day, we got 1,600 people through the gate. And we thought, you know what? We have something here. We got to stick with it. It would have been very easy to give up, but I'm glad we did. Because now we max out the Bethlehem Fairgrounds. We got about 250 vendors on site today.
Wow.
2 garlic-themed food courts and about 2 dozen garlic farms. You can buy fresh garlic if you want. Handmade crafts, specialty foods, lots of free sampling going on.
On our way to taste those free samples, I ran into some folks who told me what they love about the festival, including their favorite foods.
Well, we're trying to save our stomach, so I went with just the chowder because I have plans on going to get the garlic corn.
We had the garlic pizza.
We walked in.
Oh, that was delicious.
That's delicious too. I mean, it's kind of garlic on everything, huh?
Mac and cheese, that's my favorite thing.
The mac and cheese?
Yes.
Anything else you think is really tasty?
That's all I've eaten so far.
Spacey Tracy's roasted garlic.
Okay.
Amazing.
And we just eat it plain, right?
Yeah. Mm. Well, I get it to put it on other foods when I...
Oh. So I kinda that's eat a pro move right there. Use it as a condiment. I like that.
And then Fatty's Donuts.
Oh, Fatty's are, I believe that.
That's good.
Yeah.
Pickle Guys are the greatest, the take-home pickles.
Okay. So if I was going to taste one thing, if I had one thing to taste, that's all I get a chance to taste here, what should it be?
You can't go wrong with the donut.
I would say the donut.
That was Sandy from Watertown and Barbara from Oakville, third grader Wyatt from Canton, and Tim Roach from Bethlehem. And I agree, you can't go wrong with the Fatty's Donut. They're delicious. But the standout for me, the reason why so many people show up year after year, was the garlic ice cream. The line was long, but we got there just before they ran out.
Yep. Talk to me about this ice cream.
Well, it's from McLizzie's.
Okay.
We make it specifically once a year for this event.
How are people's reactions when they taste this?
It's amazing because I get the reaction from them and get their honest opinion. And the best part is seeing their expressions on their faces.
I'm going to get in here, taste this while I've got you with me, okay?
Here we go.
So the ice cream itself, it looks like a vanilla ice cream is what it looks like just to the eye when I'm looking at it. It's super creamy. Let's get in here and give it a bite.
My favorite part, watching the expression.
Interesting. Okay.
It's different.
The garlic is not overpowering, which is awesome.
Just subtle.
It's there. Sweet, super creamy. Oh, I see little chunks of garlic in there. Oh, wow. That's actually delicious. I love that.
It's good, isn't it?
It's fantastic.
Surprisingly good. When I first heard of it years ago, I was like, garlic? I don't know about garlic. But I'll try anything once.
Yeah,
and I got to tell you, I fell in love with the product.
Wow.
And here we are.
Garlic ice cream. I'm a believer. This is awesome. Thank you so much.
This is great. Thank you.
Awesome.
All right.
You guys want to taste this?
That was Joey Serpa from Waterbury of McLizzie's Italian Ice and Ice Cream. And that was just a taste of the Garlic Festival at the Bethlehem Fairgrounds. This is your Garlic Ice Cream Correspondent, warding off vampires and fighting garlic breath, signing out.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford Healthcare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford Healthcare. Loneliness can be a significant health risk to people of all ages. Dr. Laura Saunders, a psychologist from Hartford Healthcare's Institute of Living, talks about social isolation and why we need to connect in person.
Loneliness actually is a pretty significant health risk for people that struggle with social isolation. It affects their blood pressure, it affects their immune system, it affects your willingness to get up and get out, and can cause some not just emotional issues, but health problems as well.
You're not alone. Dr. Saunders explains how important it is for us to look to others and get out of our comfort zone.
I like to talk about social isolation as not just that individual's problem, but it's a community problem or it's a family problem. We need to connect with others. We can take space at times as well, but we need to step out of our comfort zone and do things to connect with other people. It's life-saving.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
You're listening to Seasoned. I'm Chef Plum.
And I'm Winter Kaplinson.
I made a friend for life when Winter introduced me to Chef Ben DeBow. He's doing really important work in Hartford as the executive director of Forge City Works, a project of the Melville Charitable Trust. The historical Billings Forge complex includes affordable housing, the kitchen cafe and culinary job training site, a farmer's market, and community space. Their goal is to use food as a tool to empower people in this community.
We sat down with Ben in the old Firebox restaurant. Firebox was one of the first local restaurants to close permanently in 2020 because of the pandemic. It was an upscale eatery in Hartford's Frog Hollow neighborhood, close to the state capitol. Ben is in the process of turning the old Firebox restaurant into a new space called Fire by Forge Restaurant and Cafe. I asked him to talk about how he's reimagining the space.
Firebox is an awesome restaurant. I actually was a regular there, although usually a regular when someone else is paying the bill, right? It was great food, but it was pricey. So I had several bad first dates in the tavern with guys. And the reason I would come here is I knew at least I'd get a good meal out of it. Because I hate first dates, but at least we got good food out of it.
Sure.
And it was a good test, right? If someone doesn't appreciate good food, then there's no future in that relationship. So it was a good test for it. But, you know, the whole idea of Firebox originally and this whole work was rooted in the idea that economic development within a community can be transformative. And that's kind of the big bet, right? The big hypothesis that the Melville Charitable Trust, who's one of our big funders and came into this neighborhood, Frog Hollow, almost 20 years ago, was making, right? Is that economic development and investment in human capital, those two things together could transform a community. And that's what Firebox was all about. And it was an award-winning restaurant. It was awesome. It was great. But there's some things that I think we want to change. And so that's why we're going with Fire by Forge. It's a slightly different concept. Same beautiful space, still a tribute to the fire piece of it. But one of the things about Firebox is because of price point, and I think a little bit of style as a farm-to-table, you know, menus constantly changing, it did make it ideal for training, right? Because we know that repetition is pretty key to training. And so the food was actually at a point where it was difficult to actually bring in trainees to kind of really work on it because it was so high-end and it changed all the time. And I think that was an unintended consequence, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing is the price point made it a little bit difficult for the local neighborhood. So we're here in Frog Hollow, which is a very diverse community here in Hartford, historically one of the poorest census tracts in Hartford and Connecticut, and at one point even in the nation. It's also a place, though, where manufacturing, this was like the manufacturing center of Hartford back like late 1800s, early 1900s. And when I took this job, I've only been here about 7 months. I read Susan Campbell's book about this neighborhood, and it's fascinating, right? People used to come here to kind of experience the American dream. They would come to get a job and build skills and set their families. And it was all through this manufacturing, like the Billy Spencer Manufacturing, which is the building that we're in. You had Pope Manufacturing, actually made the first electrical car in the early 1900s. He bet that people wouldn't want to drive around on combustion engines. He was wrong, but only by 100 years.
Yeah, right. just missed it.
And so think about what that would have meant for Hartford. So it's fascinating. And the work we do at Forge City Works, I feel like it's the same thing, right? People come here and they have a dream and we can give them skills in order to kind of get on a career path and kind of start working. And so part of that is we want to make this restaurant more relevant and connected to the immediate neighborhood while still being a destination, culinary destination for people. And so Fire by Forge is going to be a Pan-American inspired menu. And so that's a pretty broad palette. So that's, you know, Latin America, Central America, North America, South America, the Caribbean. In other words, it's all the ethnic groups that actually live here.
Right.
And so we're going to be inspired by the food that our trainees grew up on. We really want to create a sense of third space here where people in the community can hang out and you can camp out with your laptop and work, or there could be poetry readings, or there could be different kinds of book clubs or groups or all those kinds of things. And at night, it'll transform to a full bar, full restaurant. But hopefully, again, with a varied price point. So you can totally come in and get, you know, your fine dining, you know, your duck breasts, your seared scallops, all the things that Firebox is well known for. But you'd also come in and get a good sandwich and a good salad and have a weeknight meal. So we're really kind of being intentional about making sure that we're more relevant and accessible to the community while still maintaining a real sense of being a culinary destination.
Talk a little bit about some of the skills that people learn when they're here.
So, you know, we focus our training in kind of three areas. We do classroom, lab, and then on-the-job training in the kitchen. The classroom is a lot of soft skills. One of the things that when I started this work a while ago up in Manchester, I went around to a bunch of chef friends. I said, what's the deal? Like, why people don't make it in entry-level jobs? Yeah. Almost every answer had nothing to do with knife skills. It didn't have to do with how well they cleaned a fry lighter, how well they could use a slicer. It was actually things like show up on time, make a phone call when you're running late, anger management, right? So you got chef yelling at you on a busy Saturday night in the middle of a rush, and someone will just literally melt down and walk off the line, which also means they're walking off a job.
So how to deal with that pressure.
Right. So we spend a lot of time on all those kinds of things. Life management skills. And then we do a lab component, which is we do serve safe teaching, but it's like lectures on meat fabrication and like, how do you break down a chicken and how do you portion these things and how do you figure out a yield and how do you understand taste? And then biggest part of our program is really on-the-job training. We get you into our kitchens, as well as in the front of house doing customer service, because you have to learn that as well. And you're learning as you work. The other cool thing that we do here is we pay our trainees an hourly wage the whole time. So whether they're in a classroom, in the lab, or in the kitchen, they're getting paid.
It's still a job.
So it's a job. They treat it like a job. They have to clock in, they clock out, right? They have to be here on time, they have to be in uniform. So that training piece is just built in through the program. Mm-hmm.
I have the pleasure of knowing you, but I'd love our listeners to get to know you a little bit too. You are the executive director of Forge City Works, but you've also been a chef and a pastor. How do these parts of your identity show up in the work you do here? I mean, all paths lead to where you are right now, I feel like.
It's really true. This is like, I feel like I'm in a sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've kind of had a dual career track. So working in faith-based nonprofits as well as a pastor. And actually, I still work as a pastor. I'm a part-time pastor at a church here in Hartford, Riverfront Family Church. And I love that work. I think of ministry as helping people fulfill who, in my understanding of God, has created them to be. I feel like that's actually the work we do here, too. Yeah. And so helping people discover a sense of dignity in a job and what they are capable of and kind of pointing them in the right direction. I always say, you know, we're not the ones who are doing it. They're doing the work. Everyone has inside of them the resiliency and all the resources they need to transform their lives. Sometimes people just need a coach and an encourager and someone to point in the right direction.
Someone to believe in you and a little bit of confidence, you can go a long way.
So true. So true. And so that's really what we offer people. And so to me, that's kind of, in many respects, it's ministry.
Yeah.
Now, food has always been my passion. So all my jobs, even as a little kid, were in food. So my first food job ever was I opened a stand at a farmer's market out on Cape Cod. My older siblings were selling baked goods and making a fortune. Then my sister decided to get in on it, and she took over the cinnamon roll part of that business, made a fortune. My older brother, I'm the middle of seven, so there are a lot of us. My older brother did a lemonade stand with frozen Minute Maid lemonade and a few like sliced lemons, garnish, made a fortune.
At least it's garnishing it. Yeah.
So I had to come up with something new, so I came up with fruit salad, right? Fresh, healthy. I'm the only one who lost money that summer. Right? And it was a good lesson in both labor cost and food cost, right? Good fresh produce costs a lot of money, and it took a lot of time to cut it all. And so that was my first lesson on the business side of things, and I knew that I had to come up with a better model.
You started the culinary training program when you were still a soup kitchen chef.
Yep.
I think I photographed your first batch of chefs.
Yes, you certainly did.
And then Bistro on Main was your focus. Want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. So, you know, when we started, I was running the soup kitchen and overseeing the pantry in Manchester. And, you know, we were working with a lot of volunteers. And it occurred to me that it's great to, like, teach volunteer skills because they loved it. They'd come and they'd learn how to make, like, bulk salad dressings and knife skills. But, you know, these are volunteers who didn't really need those things. And, you know, we looked at our client base and our guests. And so I said, why don't we start training them in the off hours of the soup kitchen? So I would stay late after we closed, and we took in kind of a beta test group. And, you know, our whole philosophy there, I had it painted up on the wall, was the idea that we have faith that wholesome food, prepared and served with love, invites dignity and leads to hope. And the idea was this was about dignity and hope, not about calories. When I got there, it was a good soup kitchen, but it was pretty typical soup kitchen food. A lot out of the freezer, a lot of stuff out of cans. You kind of made do with what you had. You kind of got in line with like these prison trays, and you had to go through the line. Right. So we got rid of that. We started serving family style. So we'd send out platters of food to the tables. And as we were about a 90% scratch kitchen, worked with a lot of local farmers. So, you know, it was like a farm to table soup kitchen. And people started referring to us as one of the best restaurants on Main Street. Yeah. And it was awesome. It was great to see. And then we had an opportunity. One of the things as we were training, we realized people need some real life experience, right? So just working in the soup kitchen wasn't enough. So we actually started a catering operation, right, to give some real life experience. And that was great. It worked really well. But catering it's a different kind of stress and pressure. It's not the same as Saturday Night on the Line. And for you to survive in the restaurant, you had to experience Saturday Night on the Line. And so there was a great opportunity, and our board had a great vision for it. And we were able to buy a restaurant literally right on Main Street. And we made it into a French bistro. Where it was there for transitional employment and ongoing training.
I was just curious, have you ever watched any of your students or their faces kind of light up the first time that they go from the classroom to now they're in the kitchen and they just made this, they created this beautiful thing with their hands using the knowledge that they just gained?
It's 6 weeks in.
Yeah.
When they're working their own prep list.
Right.
And they come and they present a fully composed plate to chef at the end, and it's legit, right? Yeah. And it's like salted properly and it looks nice. I mean, it's not perfect, right? But it's like a legitimate dish that they have made from scratch with like a starch and a veg and a protein and a sauce and a garnish. And it looks good. And they dig into it themselves and they can't believe that they've made that, right? Because often 6 weeks earlier, they couldn't have cooked anything.
Right.
And that's where like their eyes light up and you can just see some people will just get it.
It's that first bit of confidence.
Absolutely. And so we've actually designed our curriculum and our program about helping people get to that level.
Yeah. Chef, you might be my hero.
Right? Okay, you could be co-presidents with me the fan club.
I mean, I'll start off as like secretary or treasurer or something, but like I do want to work my way back up there, that's for sure. Chef, Food for Good is one of the models describing everything under Ford City Works umbrella. So let's just talk about food. I know we touched on it a little bit here, but let's talk about some good food. I'm curious about the menu that's coming down. It talks about some of the food, the Pan-American food. How does that translate to a plate and what can eaters expect?
So there's going to be a lot of flavors, a lot of variety, and we're trying to make sure that it all makes sense, right? So it shouldn't be random.
Right.
But we're looking at what's inspired by authentic experiences. So you're going to see a little bit of Peru on there. You're going to see some Ecuador, actually a great appetizer we're really excited about, an Ecuadorian potato pancake that actually is pre-Hispanic, pre-Spanish, so it's actually indigenous. But you'll also see things out of regional North American as well. So Pacific Northwest, a cedar plank salmon and a shrimp and grits. You'll see some kind of Southern soul food and some New England influence. So we want to stay authentic, but really tap into those different flavors and keep it seasonal. We really believe in, you know, fresh, local, sustainable is the way to go. And so you'll see those influences in a seasonal kind of approach and with local ingredients that make sense. I think we'll have some magical experiences here.
So I did some photos of the menu. Yeah. We shared some of them as teaser photos, and nothing got more response than the mussels and frites plate. Mm-hmm. That was like, right? Just don't overlook the delicious.
Absolutely. So simple, so clean, so good.
That's classic stuff right there.
Can you share a story or two that stand out in your mind about someone who's gone through the Forge City job training, how their lives have changed because of this education?
I remember when the same day I started here back in March, a new cohort of trainees was starting at the same time. And I love those first days. I get to kind of cast the vision and let them know, like, you're why we exist here. Like, everything you see here, it only exists because of you. There are better ways to run a restaurant. There are easier ways to make money. Like, this is all about our mission. And what's cool is 12 weeks later to see some of those folks go out. So one of them did an internship after he finished with us with Bear's Smokehouse Barbecue, one of our great partners, and did really well. And so they offered him a job. And now he's working full time for them. And he came back to our recent banquet benefit event and kind of shared his story. And, you know, honestly, we could repeat that story a dozen times. You know, of the folks who come in, 80% are graduating and over 80% are landing jobs. And given that we tend to work with people who have the biggest and greatest needs and barriers, that's impressive. That's not a tribute to me. That's a tribute to our team. They've been doing this for a long time, and there's a long legacy of good work here. And so I kind of really is a privilege to kind of be able to stand in those shoes and kind of continue to lead it. But good work's been happening here for a long time.
And the hospitality industry has never needed this talent more.
That is so true. So I remember when we started in Manchester, I had to convince employers to like take a risk on people. Because it was a different market back then.
Right.
Right.
Now they're calling you now, aren't they?
They are calling every day. I'm getting calls. I don't have enough trainees to send out right now.
Right.
But there's now an understanding of the importance of it and the need for it and really a willingness to partner in that.
Yeah.
And so those kind of partnerships is actually really what makes this work. And, you know, it's a tough time in this industry, but it's actually perfect for what we do.
Yeah.
For that reason.
Man, you're changing the world one cook at a time. I love it. I absolutely love it. Talk about early feedback from the community, from the staff. How's that been?
You know, I've been overwhelmed by the amount of support that the community has had for what we do. We've been here 17 years, and many people knew Firebox and the work that they were doing. And a lot of people really knew and loved Carrie Wheaton, who was the founder of this organization. And Carrie, I don't know if you ever knew her, but she was a rock star in her own right. So she was like a serious restaurateur up in Cambridge and Boston and came down here kind of as a consultant with the Melville Charitable Trust on this project. And fell in love with the project and fell in love with Frog Hollow and Hartford and just relocated and moved here and essentially was the founder of the organization and then oversaw the restaurant. And she was dynamite. Sadly, she got sick and passed away just over a year ago. And, you know, that was crushing to the organization. And between COVID and Carrie's loss, that really put the organization kind of on hold. And so when I came in, people were ready to continue with that mission and that vision and really Carrie's legacy. And so as we've announced what we're doing, the support we've received from the community, the excitement and financial support and just support from, honestly, from the city, the mayor's office, all the support folks. I know people say it's hard to work in Hartford sometimes. People have been wonderful.
Well, Chef, we appreciate you. We can't thank you enough for spending some time with us. We wish you the best of luck, and we're pulling really hard for you, and we look forward to checking in with you soon.
Well, thanks so much. I love that you guys came, and thanks for including us. You'll have to come back when we open. We'll do like a live show from the bar.
Be careful what you wish for. I can eat a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chef.
That was Chef Ben Dubow, Executive Director of Forge City Works in Hartford. The new restaurant, Fire by Forge, is set to open in early 2023. We'll have a link to it on our website, along with some photos I took of a few of the dishes you can expect to see on the menu. Go to ctpublic.org/seasoned.
Robin, can I get a little holiday music here?
Yes, we need to set the mood for the tasting party we had.
Our super local, all Connecticut food makers tasting party. Winter and I spent the morning with Jordan Abbott, the owner of Nutmeg and Honey. Jordan curates gift boxes filled with all sorts of locally made products, everything from teas and chocolates to lotions and crafts and chocolates and more chocolates and chocolates. I like chocolate.
We, of course, were interested in all the edible treats Jordan might include in one of her foodie-themed boxes.
And chocolate.
Mm.
Jordan Abbott, welcome to Seasoned. Thank you for opening up your home/office to us so we can have a tasting party.
I am so excited to be here.
Tell us a little bit about Nutmeg and Honey. What exactly is it that you do? When did you start? Why the local stuff?
Sure. So heading into the first COVID winter in November of 2020, I was scrolling around on Facebook and I saw a post saying, where can I support local? People were kind of clamoring to support local. And there were like 50 to 100 different responses saying, go here, go here. And at that point, nobody wanted to go anywhere in person. And so I said, wait, what if we brought all these things together into one gift and you could support between 3 and 8 small businesses at the same time?
That's great.
Yeah. That started the process and it launched in March of 2021.
And now it's like a thing.
Now it's a thing.
I know we're going to get to taste some of your favorite things that go into your boxes. But before we start tasting the Connecticut made treats you build these gift boxes around, let's first explain what your one woman show, Nutmeg and Honey, does. And we absolutely love this because we're all about supporting local food makers. So what do you do?
I basically look for the best Connecticut made products. And I reach out to the owners and I say, are you willing to be a part of this business with me? And typically, they're really excited. We go from there. So I'll get samples. I'll try them. I'll try to find a theme and then work around that. So for example, I have a breakfast box that has tea and pancake mix, granola, coffee, honey, jam, maple syrup. And so once I say, I want to do something like this, I have to find those pieces to fill in the holes.
I love it. There's a saying that I once heard, we don't need more farmers to grow cucumbers. We need more people to make pickles to help those farmers sell more cucumbers.
More people to eat them.
That's it. And that's where we come in.
Well, and I think about all the times that I've gone to a big box company because I needed to send a congratulations or a, you know, a thank you. And that's great. But to be able to support people in my own backyard by sending one gift, that's really what this is all about. And so really leaning into that, our boxes, you can see we have these navy blue boxes that are really like high-end gift boxes. Those are manufactured in Bridgeport.
Yeah, they're navy blue with a gold imprint.
Yes.
You can run your finger
across.
They're
really pretty.
They look really, really posh.
The hope is that they would be a keepsake box and you would be able to store things, as well as our wooden crates, which are really pretty and you can keep them in your kitchen or wherever.
You've picked a few things here for us to try.
More than a few. I hope you didn't have breakfast because...
So we're going to jump right in and have a super local tasting party right now. So just to give you a heads up, there's going to be some noises. There's going to be some crunching. There's going to be some chewing. You know, we're going to describe what we're eating and tasting. And if you know something special about the food maker, obviously share it. Let us know about it. So let's jump right in.
These are sea salt, lemon and thyme artisan crackers from Southbury Baking Company. Cracker is an understatement. I'll let you try.
Okay. Beautiful. This is a great cracker. The texture in your mouth feels like you're about to have something sweet, a sweet shortbread sort of thing. But then you start getting into that thyme and the saltiness of it. That's delicious. Those are really yummy. I'd put that on a cheese plate in a heartbeat.
It's unusual, right? Mm-hmm. I remember when I tasted it for the first time, it was like this explosion of I don't even know what.
It's a savory shortbread.
Yeah.
Delicious savory shortbread.
The owner, Kathy, is just fantastic. And I visited her bakery a number of times and the last time I went, she gave me a scone. It was like an orange cranberry, something like that. And it did not make it out of the parking lot. She's just fabulous. And they truly are small batch. So our next one is Fasha's Chocolates in Waterbury. They were one of the first businesses that I approached. And they have been so wonderful to work with. It's a family team. The parents ran it out of their house for 21 years. And they're in this big commercial facility in Waterbury, and the owner, Carmen, his son now works there, and you can tell it's like a truly family affair. These are sea salt caramels.
Okay.
Dark and milk chocolate.
Yeah, they're really cute, too. There's this tiny little box with these four little chocolates in here, which is great, and it looks like we're not going to have any question mark as to which of the assorted chocolates we have. We're going to know they're all
it's
wonderful
like a
caramels.
Black lava salt on the top.
Right.
That gorgeous this dark looks great. Salt.
Yep, you might not be able to talk for a minute after you eat it. It's pretty good, right? I know. My kids are always asking if they can have some of these. And
I'll bet. You have to keep these locked
up, don't
you?
It's dangerous, I know.
But I love the saltiness on there, too. The salt adds a little hint of savoriness to it in my brain. The caramel itself, it's a darker caramel. It mixes really well with that milk chocolate. This is a win. If you have another box or 17 of these, I can take.
I have lots.
Oh, good. Ooh, and now you have some celery in a Tupperware.
Well, I don't know if this is local celery, but the Dragon's Blood Elixir, here you can take some celery, It's kind of a Connecticut staple.
Doug makes it in Willimantic.
Willimantic.
At the Click Community Kitchen.
He has a lot of different varieties too. I always try to have to pick something that's going to be accessible to the most people. And so he's got an extra hot sauce and different flavors. This is sort of the staple original hot sauce.
This is delicious sauce, man. It's a tomato-based sauce, which I think is pretty interesting. So I really get the tomato flavor out of that when I'm tasting it. A little florally in the background. It's not, I think people see hot sauce and they get nervous, you know, immediately. One thing that's really cool in here, and I'm going to get really chefy on you guys. You see all the black flecks in there? That's the carbon from that's on the outside of the peppers when they roast it. If you leave that in there, it actually tones down the heat a little bit and the sweetness.
Oh, cool.
Interesting.
So that's a delicious hot sauce. I like that.
And the inside scoop on the chef that makes these hot sauces is that he was a chef for touring rock bands.
Nice.
So he's lived a life, man.
Good for him.
Now settled down in Eastern Connecticut making hot sauce.
Good for him.
And at many, many farmers markets.
Yes.
With a great variety of sauces that you can sample there as well.
He's out there. I picked up a batch at the Ellington Farmers Market and he was just, you know, giving me small business advice and chatting with, he's so wonderful. So he started in 2009, so he's been around for a while. And I think the sauce is a pretty big seller. All right, so the next one is Savor Fine Foods. These are gourmet shortbread cookies. My favorite is the Firefly Hot Pepper.
Let's do it.
My favorite is the Krakatoa Chocolate Orange Spice.
Let's do it.
So good.
All right, these are the Firefly Hot Pepper. And
great.
What I love about them is they're so surprising for a shortbread cookie. You think shortbread cookie is sweet, and there's this pow of hot, but sweetness. I don't know. You're the chef.
Let me get in here.
Super good.
Oh, that's fun.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Sweet. You keep waiting for this heat to hit you in the face, and it doesn't. Oh, there it is. There's a little bit.
It's an aftertaste.
There it is. There it is.
Andre, the maker, I think he has a great palate. Like all of these flavors are blended. They're beautiful. Delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Yeah, they're really, really tasty. I'll tell you what, the spice is nice in that. And with the sweetness, so it hits you at first like a shortbread. So you're thinking it's like a sweet cookie shortbread sort of situation. And then this little tiny bit of spice creeps up in the background and just says, hey, I'm over here. Did you see me too? I would eat all of these.
All right. So you guys have had some sweet, some savory. I think we're going to cool it down with a little beverage here.
Okay.
But it's a hot beverage.
So we're pouring a little tea.
Jane Austen Black Tea from Simpson and Vail Tea Company in Brookfield.
Yeah, I know them very, very well.
There are lavender flowers, spearmint, black tea, vanilla flavor.
The vanilla comes through deep as you go deep. It's vanilla and spearmint.
Definitely nice. Spearmint. Yeah.
Yeah, let me get in here. It's loose tea, right?
It's loose tea, so I always sell it with a strainer. And they have this literary collection. During the holidays, they have gingerbread, white chocolate peppermint. So I try to bring in some of those seasonal flavors as well.
Chocolate tea?
Mm-hmm. White chocolate peppermint tea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a little confused. this is yummy tea. What do you think?
Really, really nice. And we're headed into tea season for sure. Mm-hmm. I've always got a cup of tea hanging around this time of year.
The next one is Quick Fix Brittle. And this is, have you tried this?
No, I'm excited.
No.
All right. Well, hold on to your seats.
I don't like anything chocolate and brittle.
It's sweet, so
good.
Dig right in.
Oh, yeah.
It's good, right?
So it's toffee, graham cracker, almonds, dark chocolate, sea salt.
It's made in Bridgeport.
So the first thing you think of when I think of like a toffee or a brittle, I think of it being sticky, sticking to your teeth.
Mm-hmm.
But what's cool about this is because it has the graham cracker in there, it almost makes it not have that stickiness and that crunchiness to it. It has a little bit more of a, it breaks apart easier, as I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is really, really yummy. And that whole bag would last about 15 seconds if you bring it in closer.
I know. Don't look at the nutritional information.
It's a treat.
It's a treat.
It's a treat.
It's a treat. Well, and the cool thing too is that I kind of anticipated that people would be sending them to other people in Connecticut a lot. And so many of these are going out of state to other places. So people in Nevada and New Mexico can try the local treats from Connecticut and say, like, wow, that's really good. And maybe they'll be interested in buying them.
Right.
I don't know. So the last one we have is Nut Stash. It's based out of Torrington.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
I just carried this one flavor. It's brown sugar cinnamon toffee, but she carries a ton of other flavors. But it's a really unusual treat that I've never tasted anything like it. So.
Okay, let's get in here. And on the back of the bag, it actually says pairs great with port, sherry, wine, any beer, whiskey. Now I'm definitely intrigued. So it almost looks like a granola when it comes out.
Almost.
It has that, you can see the different crushed up nuts that are in there. I'm guessing they're stuck together with the toffee. Let's get in here and give it a taste.
A little coconut in there too.
Yeah. That's fun. I can see how that would work with wine. After I read that in the back, that's what I'm picturing in my head. Now, mm-hmm. How could you, when you guests come over, you put down, yeah, they're always having a glass of wine, put down a bowl of this stuff. They might stick with this instead of the wine. The sweetness is light. The texture is really, really...
No, they're soft.
Yeah, soft, right? But it doesn't crumble apart in your mouth. And cinnamon is subtle, and it's not overly sweet, but it's sweet enough to where if you put it with a big California cab or something, it's not going to overpower it.
It's unusual, too. Like, I've never tasted anything really
the texture,
like it.
Yeah, for sure.
And I know she uses lots and lots of different types of nuts, and so it's an expensive treat to make.
For sure.
But she's received just a really warm reception from both farmers markets and from retail stores.
It says right here, it says no grains, it's gluten-free. Mm-hmm. Totally nuts.
Totally nuts.
Totally nuts.
That's great. What a delicious treat that is.
I mean, I think the key is the curation. You could shop for all of these things separately, but I love the idea that you could rely on someone with really good taste to curate these beautiful boxes that represent the makers in our state.
It's all local. That's the greatest thing about it. Jordan, these things are fantastic. Thanks for sharing with us.
Thank you so much.
That was Jordan Abbott of Nutmeg and Honey, curator of beautiful gift boxes filled with Connecticut-made goodies. You'll find a link to the Nutmeg and Honey store, as well as photos of some of the items we tasted, on our website, ctpublic.org/season. And bonus, we tasted more delicious treats from local food makers than we could include here, so we've listed all of our favorites on our show page. Happy gift giving. I'm Winter Callinson.
So Winter, thanks for spending the month with me, sharing some of your friends with us and many of your beautiful photos and doing what you do, shining a light on some of the state's best chefs and farmers. I hope we can do it again.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure, and I look forward to a full year of your adventures with your co-hosts and the new season of Seasoned.
I'm Chef Plum. Seasoned is produced by Robin Doyen-Aiken, Katie Pilarski, Emily Cherish, and Catrice Claudio. Don't forget, new episodes of Seasoned drop early, every third Thursday, or you can listen to Seasoned on Connecticut Public Radio the first Thursday of the month at 2 p.m. Just subscribe to the podcast and you'll never miss it. And you can stay connected to us by subscribing to our newsletter for food lovers. It's called Full Plate, and it's delivered to your inbox every month. It's an email you'll actually want to open. Check out all the latest food content from Connecticut Public, including videos and recipes from cookbooks we love, at ctpublic.org/food.
Thanks for listening, everyone. See you right back here next month.